Welcome to the RICO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast. My name is Justin, and I am an addict. And thanks to my God, the steps, and the fellowship of other addicts, I am sober one day at a time since June 19th, 2015. And for that, I am beyond grateful. Welcome once again to the RICO 12 Speaker Meeting. We are an organization whose addictions include alcohol, drugs, lust, sex, food, and gambling, just to name a few. We come together from all places, faiths, and backgrounds to learn the similarities of addiction and to gain tools and hope from others who are walking a similar path. We invite recovering addicts with at least 1 year sobriety and who are actively working their recovery in their respective fellowships to share their experience, strength, and hope on a live Zoom meeting each Friday at noon Central Time for 20 to 25 minutes. Then we, the live audience, get the opportunity to ask questions of the speaker for another 20 to 25 minutes. In order to ask your questions, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. If you are hearing this podcast recorded and would like to participate as a live audience member in the future, or if you would like to be a guest speaker in a future meeting, please go to RICO12.com, that's RECO12.com, to learn more and to submit your email address there to receive weekly invitations or to submit to become a guest speaker. RICO 12 is an ad-free service and self-supporting, and we appreciate your help in keeping it that way. We gratefully accept contributions to help cover the costs of the Zoom platform, podcast platform, web hosting, and administrative costs. To contribute, you can go to rico12.com/support, or you can click the link to PayPal that's here in the live meeting in the chat or in the show notes of the podcast. When you contribute, please specify the meeting number. This is meeting number 33. Last week's meeting was with David H., co-host of the Positive Sobriety podcast, and his presentation on integrating the good and bad, the shadow, into the self was really interesting and helpful. If you missed hearing that one or any other meeting we have done, you can listen to them in podcast form by searching for RICO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast on virtually any podcast platform that you use. Or you can go to the RICO 12 website and find it under the link podcast. If you find value in this service, please take a moment to go to the podcast platform of your choosing and leave a rating and review. It helps us work our 12th step by carrying the message of recovery to more addicts who suffer. One more word about our speakers before we introduce today's speaker. When we line up a speaker for a meeting, we ask them to seek guidance on what and how to present so that they can reflect the light they have been given. That light will inspire hope, meaning, worth, and growth in us, the listening audience. Now, let's introduce our speaker for today, Yitzi, whose talk is entitled, I've Recovered, Now What? Now, Yitzi is a sex and love addict who found his recovery in the Big Book of AA. He spends lots of his time helping people in recovery, as well as outside of recovery. He sponsors as many people as he can, as well as being of service to others in many ways. He finds ways to be helpful by helping people find sponsors, by sharing meeting information and recovery literature and other resources. He does this in many fellowships and has lots of connections with people in fellowships that he doesn't attend. He studies AA history. He studies the steps, traditions, and concepts and has a passion for it. Take it away, Yitzi. The floor is now yours.
Thank you. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. So my name is Yitzi, and I'm a gratefully recovered sex addict, love addict, and codependent, among other stuff. And really, really grateful to be here. Thank you, Justin, for this. It's funny, I usually am not nervous before I speak. And today I got down on my knees a few minutes ago and I asked God to speak through me, and I was thrown into fear. But I'm also grateful that today is also, like a lot of times, I've shared a bunch of times, especially now on Zoom, I've been asked to speak a bunch. And I usually, like, my head gets all into, like, what about, my head gets all into what I'm going to say and preparing, and, you know, I throw all that out the window. And today, thank God, maybe I was busy with other things. I didn't really give much attention to that. So I'm grateful for that. Anyway, so I'm going to try to qualify briefly because I'm not here to share my story. I'll qualify briefly and then I'll get into the topic. So to qualify briefly, my addiction is with lust. It's with codependency. They're intertwined for me. They're both the same. I grew up in a family that the environment that I was in was very conducive to both of those. A lot of shame around sex and also a lot of like brushing stuff under the rug, and we don't talk about stuff, and a lot of dysfunction and divorce and not talking about feelings and a lot of stuff like that. And so for my whole teenage years, the entirety of my teenage years, I pretty much wasn't present. I was running here and running there and just escaping life in every way possible. And the only God knows why I didn't turn to drugs or alcohol, but I just didn't. And I don't have a problem with alcohol or drugs or anything like that. I only have a problem with sex and with lust, fantasy, and stuff like that. But I don't have, I don't have a problem with like alcohol, drugs, gambling, food, or any other things currently that I'm aware of. But the bottom line is that in regard to sex, I do the exact same thing that an alcoholic does with alcohol. They go for more and more and more, and it works for them as a solution. It works for me as a solution until it doesn't. And then I come to face everything I've been running away from. And that's where I started. That's where I started like healing a little bit, like changing a little bit at a time. It's a lifelong process, this healing journey. But I'm changing a little bit at a time. And yeah, basically it's been a wild ride. It's been a crazy, amazing, wonderful journey for me. So anyway, I'm gonna try to focus on what life is like once I got sober, to the best of my recollection. So I actually had I had a relapse after a year and a month around. And all that taught me in plain English was to just be really serious about my stuff for the most part. Like it just gave me this message that my disease doesn't care. But I want to talk a little bit about that period, that month, that year and change, and then what now it's been a little over 2 years, and like what has changed. I've recovered now what? So the first time like I went through the steps first in SA, like my primary original fellowship, and I had a spiritual awakening. And then what happened was I got into a rut with codependency. It was definitely there before, but I was so asleep to it that earlier that year I was sponsoring someone. I was taking someone through the steps, that is, and he asked me for some resources on codependency, and I had from someone that I knew, a friend of mine who had some resources, and I sent them his way, and even read some of the literature, like a couple pages, and like I was like, nah, it's not really me, you know, like not really talking to me. And then fast forward a couple months, maybe 4 or 5 months later, and I'm at my wit's end, and I was a few months sober, and then I would relapse, then I would get another month and then relapse, and like everything was going well. And then out of nowhere, I felt like it was literally out of nowhere that I just ended up back at the bottom, and not knowing like what's missing, like what was the missing piece for me? Like, what am I not doing? Am I not connecting with my higher power enough? Am I not connecting with God? Am I not going to enough meetings? Like I knew that like meetings isn't the solution, but there's a place where I hear the solution, where I could find someone to work with. Like I personally believe with my whole heart that my truth, not anyone else's truth, but my truth is that I recovered by the steps I took and not by the meetings I made. In AA, there are some people that say, we recover by the steps we take and not the meetings we make. So I'm saying for me, I recovered by the steps and not by the meetings. But anyway, so I'll fast forward. So a friend of mine basically, pointed out to me that I probably have codependency. And uh, and I because I argue a lot and different things are very, very heated in my attitudes about different things. And I was obviously the classic addict in denial. I said, no way, can't be. And I tried proving to him that I wasn't. And then at one point I was reading in the AA Big Book that it says, and this is where the shift happened for me. I was just reading this book about alcoholism. And I didn't think I was codependent, and I was in denial about my codependency. But sometimes the truth just seeps right in without me trying. That I find is the grace of God. That's what I think is the grace of God, that the truth just flows right into me. I'm not even willing to hear it. I'm in denial. I'm not even willing to hear the truth, but I was open to possibly something, and it just flowed into me that maybe I am codependent. And the sentence in the Big Book on page 31 reads that by every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule and therefore non-alcoholic or non-codependent in my case. And I was like, holy crap, that's me. And I started that I was at like a convention. And so Saturday night, I printed out a bunch of stuff from like codependency stuff. And I started reading it, like devouring it. And I found myself in every page and every paragraph, whatever I was reading, I found myself there. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a codependent. And I went and I found the sponsor. I noticed I didn't say I went to a meeting, because I've heard, I'm not trying to knock any meetings, but I've heard that the meetings in my area weren't focused on the solution. And so I decided to go get a sponsor. So I found someone who would sponsor me. And I also got involved in some, there were Skype meetings. I got involved in some of them as much as I could, as much as it worked out in my schedule with work and everything. And I started on my journey. And then after about 3 weeks, my sponsor said he's moving across the world and he will not be available for 3 weeks. And my response to him was, I need to recover now. Bye. Have a nice life. And, it wasn't like, thankfully, I had enough recovery in me to understand that if the sponsor gets annoyed that I left him because he's not going to be available for 3 weeks, that's his problem and not mine. And I actually had a conversation with a couple of friends about this morning, last night, about sponsoring, about different things. And the bottom line is that if a sponsor gets upset, that's the sponsor's problem. It's not the sponsee's problem. And hopefully the sponsor has their own program to work. So anyway, I found another guy and he took me through the steps in about 3.5 weeks. And I'd already been through the steps. I'd already gone through the steps out of the Big Book in SA for my lust addiction. And I had already experienced the freedom, and then it was taken from me, because when I got into that codependency rut, one just fed into the other. Because if I need validation from people, then I make every woman, I put every woman on the altar and I call every woman God. And as an example, and then therefore it just turns into lust in 1 second, because I'm taking an object, right? Because I'm not taking a person, I'm taking an object, I'm objectifying someone and then putting them on an altar and saying, you're God. So that's basically what happened there. And I went through the steps with that guy. In the middle of my fourth and fifth step is when I had, those are the inventory steps where you share about your resentments, your fears, and your harmful conduct, including sex. And somewhere in the middle there, I had an awakening. And it took me, we did it in 2 days in the course of 8 or 9 hours. And I remember I woke up the second morning and a friend of mine, this is the first time it ever happened in my life that obsession was removed. And a friend of mine was texting me about something that was happening in current events in one way or another. And at some point I just realized that he wasn't there to have a discussion. He was there to have an argument. And I'm like, I'm not interested in an argument. First time ever in my life that I said I never had an argument. This is my typical idea. I'll give one example. I was at a therapist and we got into a heated discussion about something. And I'm not blaming me or the therapist or anything. And then I went home and I concocted a whole new version to the story about how I answered him and smarted him, and then he smarted me back and forth, and we're there arguing with each other the whole weekend. And then on Monday, I see him again. And then I'm all angry and all pent up with rage. And he's like dumbfounded as like why this is. Like he doesn't understand where I'm coming from because he didn't have this thing play out in his head as I did in my head. So anyway, the bottom line is after I went through the steps then, it shocked me. But like the big book of AA says in the promises of the 10th step that I reacted sanely and normally and it happened automatically. It wasn't something that I did or an action that I chose to do. It was just like, it happened through me. Like, wait, this is me. It was like almost like an outside force was like guiding me as to what to say or what not to say and to the ability to let go of that need to be right. And that was the first experience that I had with that awakening. And I went home and I remember I did something which is sometimes very controversial in 12-step room, which is I was barely sober and I was sponsoring. I was sponsoring that whole time from when I started working the steps in January of 2016 until when I actually got sober in, was actually, November 2016. It's when I like finished the steps for the first time. And then I got sober. My original sobriety date was late July of 2017. And from then I started sponsoring. I remember my first 30 days, I was just raw. I didn't know emotions. I didn't know anything. I was just raw. At the end of 30 days, it's been a while since I'd been sober 30 days in SA. And I kept getting a couple of days and relapsing. And then I basically, I realized that if I was able to get to 30 days, something happened for me. Something changed. I had some awakening. And I was taking people through the steps for SA and separately for CODA. And I was basically, you know, I was on fire. And I still am. I'm just a lot more, my fire is a lot more balanced. Not raging and like running in every direction. It's, you know, it's a fire that's been burning in my heart for about 2 years, a little over 2 years. And I still have the same passion. It's just a much more mature passion, a more developed passion. So anyway, the bottom line was I got to that place over time where like I started facing other things. I started facing my own denial about religion and different things. I'm not going to get into that discussion, but it's been a journey with me with my religion. And the bottom line is today I practice it. It's been an up and a down. Today I practice it from a place of wanting to do it because I feel this is my connection. And like I'm Jewish and I happen to keep the Sabbath completely. And I don't struggle with it today. And over time, there have been struggles in those even more recently. And now it's currently my day for my 11th step, my day for my meditation, quiet and connecting with God. And like to do anything to disturb that, like to desecrate it in any way, turning on a device or anything like that, is for me, in my mind, disturbing the silence, that gift that I have. And it didn't come easily or naturally. It came with a lot of work, a lot of inventory, a lot of writing about this stuff and giving it up, giving my selfishness in regard to religion up to God. But anyway, I was about 4 or 5 months sober when someone suggested that I look into dating and, you know, you sound very mature. You sound like you got your stuff together. And I started looking into it. And then in meditation, this question came to me, do I have what to add to someone else's life? And I don't remember if I heard it somewhere or it came in from somewhere. That do I have to add to someone's life? And I basically sat with that for a few weeks and I sat with a bunch of other questions and fears around being married and being in a relationship because I'd never been there before. And I pretty much didn't know what to expect. And I remember I was going to a therapist then and I came back to him a couple of weeks after we had that initial discussion. And I'm like, I just realized something, that nothing's happening right now in respect to dating and I'm okay. And that tells me that I'm ready because it doesn't matter to me if it's happening or not. And in short, I'm going to get to it more, but that's been my attitude currently, because currently I'm still like in the dating zone of like dating different people and like figuring stuff out, although I've been in relationships, which I'll get to. But I haven't lost that serenity of that time back then when I told that therapist, like, everything's just perfectly okay. When it's the same to me if it happens or if it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter to me. So basically what happened was, so I went out with a few people, and then the third person I went out with, we went out on a few dates, and then she asked me if, she said, let's just stay friends. I don't know if it's going to work out. And then a few months later, she asked me out again. And she told me that the reason why she asked me out again is because she's met, she dated someone else, and she realized the difference between me and that other guy, that I had something that he didn't, which is that I was very open about my emotions. Because thanks to recovery and thanks to therapy, I've been able to become more in touch with my emotions. Now I'm still an emotional baby, which means to say I'm still learning a lot about my emotions, still learning about what they mean and how to process them and everything like that. But I'm definitely growing in that area. I'm definitely aware and growing in that area. So anyway, we started dating again. I was actually went away for the summer. I was working in a sleepaway camp and would speak at night. And, I wasn't where she lived. So I asked her if we can, talk over the summer, and if it works out, we'll meet up after the summer. And that's what we did. We'd speak almost every night for a couple hours after I finished work. And it was a good way to decompress for me. And it's basically, at that point I wasn't going to therapy. So the interesting thing that happened was I have a friend who does different kind of recovery coaching and healing in different ways. And she offered me 6 free sessions of like some kind of model that she was doing, some kind of coaching model, which was really, really transformative. And like my first couple of weeks in that relationship, when we started actually dating in person, she was very, very helpful in that journey. It gave me what I needed. It took me over the edge. And then basically, I'm going to speak for a minute briefly about this girl and how I told her about recovery on our second in-person date after knowing her already for those 2 months. And like, it was a lot of prayer. And my rule with dating is I don't go on a date before meditating for at least 10 minutes. Besides whatever meditation I do generally, like meditation has been a stronghold in my recovery. I made a joke to someone last night that I'm obsessed with this guy named Anthony DeMello, because I own 14 of his books, and there are probably more that I don't own, but I've read most of them, besides the ones that I just got this last week. But I read it and reread it and just take it in, because it really speaks to my soul. This stuff really speaks to me and really helps me be more compassionate, pause more throughout the day, and not be so rash in my thinking and my emotions. And his perspective into things has really, really helped me in an amazing way. Now, I'll also just make this disclaimer that I, since mentioned before that my experience is the Big Book, I mean, the Big Book says in the 11th step that there are other helpful books, and I use the Big Book in my meditation every day. And to do what it says there. And then I open other spiritual books and study them and kind of take that into my day. And I'm not here to talk about meditation. I spoke about meditation a while ago, actually on a similar podcast. But basically, I'm gonna go back to the story, because I just mentioned meditation, so I brought that up because I have a very strong passion for meditation. It is giving me the ability to have a quiet mind, even when there's seeming chaos all around me, to have silence within noise. I'll just throw one random idea around that. One experience that I had a while ago, I worked with like special needs children. I worked with a kid that was autistic and low functioning, and we were in a car together, and he was like yelling and shouting, and someone else was taking care of him. like another person that was taking care of him, and I didn't have to take care of him. So I sat there while he was screaming for about 10 minutes in peace, meditating during his screaming and crying. And that was a really cool experience. Just I like kind of shut out all that noise and I didn't hear anything of it. I just was sitting in my thoughts and just in peace. Anyway, try to wrap this up. So I told this girl about my recovery, and it took her a while. And when she came back to me after she processed it, I gave her a number of a therapist, and I gave her a number of a woman in the spouse's fellowship in case she wanted someone to speak to. And then she had two concerns. One was about relapse, and one was, if you're so busy with God, how are you going to have time for me? And she explained to me later that her dad was very into like going to study, the Talmud and God's law, and then wasn't emotionally present for the family because he was always going out to study. So that's where she was coming from. And I told her, well, there are no guarantees with this, but my firm and sincere belief is that if I continue doing this work that I do on a daily basis and continue to grow, that there's a good chance I will stay sober a day at a time for the rest of my life. And the second thing about God, I said, God comes first, but if that means that if I need to wake up at 5:30 to go to a meeting, work with the sponsee or whatever else that I need to do, I'll do that. And I won't take that time from you. I'll make sure that we have the time that we need. Like, you're going to be God's first in this relationship, but you're going to be the close second. And we were in a relationship for about 5 months. It didn't end up working out for various reasons. And the bottom line was that I went through what my therapist told me later was just a healthy way of grieving. I didn't go into any codependent obsession about her or in any way. The relationship was maybe immature on some level, looking back at it without judging myself. But the relationship was immature, but it wasn't codependent. It wasn't like clingy. It wasn't obsessive. It was just a relation. It was just a healthy relationship. And it's been a wild ride since then. And I can understand why they say in the 12-step rooms not to date before the first year. And the joke is that no one knows because no one's ever tried it. But because they don't listen. People don't listen to suggestions, which is why they say that the 12-step rooms are not a cult, because in the cult people listen to what they're told to do. Do what they're told to do, and we're human beings, and we're given that ability to do what we want to do. And the thing about recovery is I have to want to do this work in order to recover. Not only want to, I have to do the work in order to recover, but I have to want to do it myself. If I'm doing it for someone else, it's not going to work, because it's not going to be sincere, and it's not going to clean out my heart, because my heart has to come from my innermost desires. Anyway, I'll wrap up with this. I'll just say that I understand about they say in the 12-step rooms not to date for the first year, because there's so much that comes along with dating. Like, I had to do constant sharing, like with people, like a 10-step, which is I just share and let them know this is the situation, this is what's happening, it brings up this fear, it affects this part of myself, and God would have me be A, B, C, D. And almost every date I would go and do that. And my previous sponsor, who was very supportive, he told me that it's possible that because we didn't have a friendship necessarily, when you date, you go and you start with a friendship, and then on that you build a relationship, and on that you build a commitment. And if you put God at the center of every one of those stages, then it can last. And he said, you didn't do the friendship. You jumped right into the romantic dating part. And, that's why I went through fear almost every date. But I realized also, because I didn't know, it was my first ever real relationship in my life, and I didn't know what to expect. And now that I'm on a more mature level, fear still comes up when I date and stuff, but it's not as bad. It's on a much lower level, because I've already been through some of those experiences. So yeah, that's basically where I'll end off because I'm basically out of time. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Yitzi. Really appreciate your story, your experience, your strength and hope. There were several things in there that triggered questions from me and I hope from the audience. A quick reminder before we turn a minute back over to you, Yitzi, to our audience. If you have questions, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. It looks like two speech bubbles overlaid with each other. Type that question in. We'll get to it. I will ask that question of Yitzi and we'll go from there. So Yitzi, if you wouldn't mind taking about a minute and discussing how the fellowship, your primary fellowship that you attend or the one that rings most important to you today helps you so that someone else who's maybe walking a similar path can say, maybe I should check out that fellowship too.
Okay. So yeah, so my primary fellowship, like I said before, is SA, Sexaholics Anonymous. I've also been around a lot of other fellowships. And I've been able to gain a lot from them. Like my current sponsor is from SAA. I have a lot of friends and I go to a lot of meetings now currently in SLAA, but they all lead to the same path to this higher power, to God of my understanding. So for me in SA, the focus on that lust is the spiritual problem and therefore like the recovery from lust is the spiritual solution, and focus on that is a very helpful idea for me, because that was my main problem. And in the big book, I learned that lust is just another word for selfishness, just another character defect called selfishness. And when I look at it in that way, it's just helpful. But the way the fellowship has helped me, it's given me a bunch of people I could call literally anytime, day or night. So I have people all around the world through WhatsApp groups, Facebook, and I was able to call a friend of mine in the Philippines one night when I was like having an emotional meltdown, you know, in the beginning of that relationship actually. And I didn't know what to do. And I called someone and I was on the phone with him for 4 hours, you know, and that's what I needed at that moment. And it's just having that fellowship, having a group where I could go and share anything and know that I won't be judged. And have people that are supporting me on this journey. People, I realized over time, I need also people that are ahead of me in this journey that kind of cheer me on and say, you're doing okay and you're doing well, and not to be discouraged and, you know, when different things come up.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much. Got a couple questions that came in. First one. What has been the most challenging in your journey to emotional sobriety, Yitzi?
It's an interesting question. The most challenging, I would say on some level, my relationship with my mom, which I didn't get a chance to touch on at all. But my mom is someone who really tries, really doesn't know better. And she does try to connect, but she doesn't realize how much of her subtle ways, or not so subtle ways of trying to control me, were harmful to me. And I had to learn how to place boundaries and take an emotional step back. Like one of my friends described it as like I had an emotional enmeshment with my mother, where I depended on her for almost everything. Where fast forward to now, where I'm living on my own for a number of years already, and I don't take a penny from her. And I usually don't go to her for advice unless it's something I think she has experience with. But I do share, like, I'll just share one more thing. I do share with her more over time. It's been that I do share with her certain things about my life, but I won't go into major detail for the most part.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that, Yitzi. Another question that's come in says, hi, Yitzi. I have been in the program for 2 years only, slowly starting to get recovery. I have met a girl that I like and she likes me. We've only spoken twice on the phone. Do you think it may be a good idea to date her and do recovery at the same time? I like her a lot. And so if I leave a year, she would highly likely meet someone else as she is on a marriage site. A little bit more on this. I am currently fantasizing about her, and I told her 2 days ago I need time to do some spiritual work. Do you think it would be okay to contact her in 4 to 8 weeks? I don't want to leave it too late. Sounds like we got some relationship advice they're asking for. What do you think, Yitzi?
Yeah, so I don't, I will say it's something to bring up to probably a sponsor or a higher power. I did mention the beginning of this, beginning of my share, I did say that for me, I have to sit with that question of, am I in a position to add to someone's life? Because hopefully that's what dating would be, dating toward the purpose of marriage and having the ability to add to someone else's life. And if I don't have that ability, then it doesn't matter how much I like the other person, it probably won't last, or it'll last and will be a terrible experience. I gave a talk a while ago about 2021, I'm thinking 2019, about sober dating. And my recommendation based on my experience is that I didn't start dating until I'd been through the steps and had a solid period of emotional sobriety, not just physical sobriety and like sobriety, freedom from my acting out or freedom from my obsessions and being completely free from all that, like not experiencing lust on any level in any form, but emotional sobriety and emotional growth and spiritual growth and asking my higher power if it's the right thing, not because I want it and because I'm jumping into it. So that's my experience. And so I would recommend, like I said before, they say it's a year. They say a year of sobriety. I would say a year of sobriety is not really the buffer. The sobriety time is not the buffer. The buffer is having been through the 12 steps, having had a spiritual awakening, and then asking that higher power to show me if I'm ready. At that point, if I've made amends, do I see the harm that that the things I had to make amends for caused? And like, do I know who I am right now based on my inventory? Do I know who I am? And do I want to bring that into a marriage, or do I want to continue to maybe work on myself a little bit more and develop a little more spiritually so I can have what to give?
Thank you. And I think something that you brought up in your talk from page 31 of the Big Book about how we addicts are, we try to prove ourselves the exception to the rule over and over and over again. I think it's important to see our own insanity. Very, very good. Thank you for sharing that. Another question that came in. Thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, Yitzi. I have a question that has been swirling in my mind for a while. Can the steps operate in people who have experienced significant trauma, or does an individual have to do the trauma work first?
I don't have an opinion on that. First of all, I'm not a therapist. And I don't know if a therapist can either have an opinion on that. I would say, from what I've seen and for myself, it's been in tandem. It's been doing work in trauma with a good therapist and doing the work with a sponsor, with a good sponsor who also understands that I have trauma, that can understand what that maybe means and maybe be gentle with different areas when it comes to different things. And the difference between a sponsor and a therapist is the sponsor helps the person. I'll just speak for myself. My sponsor helped me give up the self-will that was involved in the story to God. The part, the selfishness, the fear that was in the story to God. And then my therapist helped me deal with the feelings that maybe drove the fear, that the steps don't address directly. But I wouldn't know what someone, I have no idea what someone else should do. Which order, if it matters. It's totally up to the individual. Some people find it beneficial to do it one way, and some people say that their experience was that their trauma had to be dealt with first before they can get any measure of sobriety and then take a look at the steps. So there's no right or wrong way to do that.
All right, thank you, Yitzi. You talked a little bit about meditation, about you alluded to morning routines. What importance does a morning routine have in your own recovery?
Morning routine. So in short, it grounds me for the day. It gives me a focus to take into my day. And I like my previous sponsor had a very good analogy. If you have a vacuum cleaner and you plug it in and you go to the next room with a long cord and you go to the next room and then you vacuum, you know it's working until the plug comes out. Why? Because you're out of power. So then sometimes we're out of power and then we just keep running on an empty vacuum. We're running on ourselves and we don't realize it. And what meditation does for me is it plugs me. It's a recharge station so I can be plugged into power throughout the day and then recharge by bringing myself back to the place where I was in that meditation as the daily drama of life keeps happening.
I want to mention
one more thing about meditation. So a while ago, like been over a year, a little over a year ago, my previous sponsor dropped me. We had a falling out about misunderstandings, whatever it was. He was my sponsor for over 2 years, and I'm really grateful to him. But the bottom line was that I went and I found someone else in my home group. Now, my previous sponsor was an old timer in AA, and he was very into meditation. He helped me a lot with seeing the stuff in the big book. And I went to this other guy who had a lot of years of sobriety as well, but he didn't have a specific practice of meditation. I tried being a sponsee for a month, and I felt some disconnect. And I don't know why. It seemed to me that my meditation is a very personal relationship with God for me. It's a very, very personal thing. And I can't take spiritual direction from someone who doesn't have that practice. And I found my current sponsor who's been sponsoring me for about a year. And he has a practice of meditation and I feel like he really understands me and is able to help me.
Thank you, Yitzi. Are you willing to share a little bit about what your meditation practice looks like? Do you use guided meditation? What kinds of things do you do?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So early on in recovery, my sponsor told me to just pray and meditate for like 2 minutes. And in the beginning, I would just sit with the paper and whatever would come up, I'd write down. And then I would like give it up to God, whatever it was, if it was good, if it was bad. Sometimes it was a list, like a shopping list. Okay, you got to do a bullet list of A, B, C, D. You know, that was what I did in the beginning. And then at some point I jumped into guided meditation. I used the Headspace app early on in recovery. And then once I got to step 11, I mainly worked with the big book for the most part for a while. And then when I met my previous sponsor about in early 2018, I was like 5 months. I remember I was about 5.5 months sober, and I heard he's a circuit speaker, and I heard a talk of his, and it blew me away. And I got his number from someone, called him up, and asked me to sponsor him. I remember I was a little floating, right? In recovery, I like floating. I like running here and running there. So I was doing two-way prayer, which is a form of sitting, for those who don't know, it's a form of sitting and writing. You write down every last thought that comes, set a timer for like 10, 15 minutes, and you write down all your thoughts, and then you filter it out. Is it absolutely pure, honest, selfish, and loving, unselfish and loving, which is the four absolutes of purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. Right? You filter it out, God's will versus self-will, and if it doesn't match all four, then I discard it. And sometimes stuff come up. Oh, you got to make amends to this one. Call this guy, you know, stuff like that. And I was doing it for a couple of weeks. And then I called my sponsor and I spoke with him, and he asked him if he has any recommendation on books with meditation. And he said, he laughed and he said the big book, and he sent me a talk of his that he did on prayer. He showed me first how to do it, and then he sent me a talk on how to do it, which basically is a 12-part. It's 12. He took the directions of the big book and split it up into 12 parts, and how to focus simply on each part, and in meditation. And after 12, do it for a week. And after 12 weeks, you're doing all 12 parts, and it's not overwhelming, and it takes 7 to 10 minutes to do it. So on a regular day, if I have the time and I wake up on time and whatever, I'll currently sit for about 10 minutes and do that and focus on those areas that in the big book that talk about meditation. And then I'll open up one of the books of Anthony DeMello, usually storybooks, and read a couple of stories. He says to read a couple of stories and then take them in and chew them, eat them, or yourself, so to speak. One of my favorite stories about stories, about why it works. So the students, he says, the students once asked the master, "You tell us stories, but you don't reveal the meaning to us." And the master laughed and said, "Well, how about if I gave you an apple, but first took a bite out of it? You know, you got to first eat your own fruit." And for me, that's what it's been. It's been a lot of like mulling over these stories and sitting carrying the story for weeks, until one day I'm in a situation where I see it through the light of that story. And sometimes it's just a joke and it's confusing. What does he even mean? What's the spiritual message behind it? And it's just been, it's been a very interesting journey with understanding that, understanding the way to look through life with those stories.
Thank you for sharing that. I have one more question. If anybody else in the live audience has another question, please type it in before we get wrapped up here. My question, Yitzi, is, you know, you mentioned the fire that you had early on in your recovery and still have, but early on it was super hot, you know, and kind of burning wild and out of control. How do you temper that and keep that fire alive, but keep it more even? How do you do that in your own recovery walk?
Yeah. So the good news is I can't do it. And the bad news is I can't do it. It's the same thing. In other words, it's something that if I keep growing spiritually and I keep doing this, it's like, I understand that now on this journey, I'm a power seeker. I've gotten to a relationship with God and this power in a beautiful way. And now I want to experience more of it at a deeper level, at a deeper heightened level of awareness and facing more about myself in different ways and being more honest and being more tolerant of others. And so in regard to that fire, I remember a while, like it was a bit over probably 2.5 years ago, I sponsored someone for codependency. He was an old timer in another fellowship. And he's like, he was telling me something about, "You're on fire. It's like, how long do you think it's going to last?" And whatever, we spoke maybe like 3-4 months ago, maybe a little longer by now already, maybe April. Wow, that was a while. And I jokingly told him that fire is still not, you know, it's still burning in me. And if I understand that I'm a power seeker and every single morning I got to plug into that power, and it's not that I'm just powerless over lust or sex or this or that. It's I'm without power in any area of life at all, unless I turn to God. And because if not, my fear takes over and I just can't cope. So in short, the whole of my experience has just been that it's just something that evolves with spiritual development, with letting God hack away at my character defects. But then again, when I was new to sponsoring, I had a very different approach than the one I have now that develops over experience. And I see meetings differently. I see everything differently. It's a different outlook. A more, like I said before, a more mature outlook on things, and it just keeps evolving, and it'll probably continue to grow, but you know, because there's still ways for me to go, you know.
Awesome, thank you. All right, we have one more question that came in from our live audience. He says, "How can I tell if I struggle with codependency?" And that's a question I was actually going to ask earlier too. So thank you for asking that. What are your thoughts on that, Yitzi?
Yeah, thanks. So I will try to do my best to like answer that. I mean, codependency could be a lot of different things. The bottom line is this. I'll throw out two ways. One way is from an old timer in AA called named Mark Houston. And if you want to know if you struggle with codependency, if you put in on YouTube Mark H Unplugged, it's the name of a talk. It's a great talk to listen to about codependency. He says over there that if I derive my sense of self from anywhere but within my own soul, that's codependency. If I derive my sense of self from what my community tells me, my religion tells me, the people in the program tell me, I have to be true to myself and see who I am based on who I am, not based on what other people tell me. And now my own way of putting it, codependency is the lack of responsibility where I'm supposed to take responsibility, and the overtaking, the taking more responsibility on things that I can't take responsibility for, that I shouldn't and can't take responsibility for, that is not appropriate for me to take responsibility for. Like other people's feelings, other people's, anything to do with others, and everything to do with self is what I have to do, and everything to do with others is what they have to do.
Very good. Thank you for that. And a couple of comments that came in. One was just saying how patient you are and how grateful they are for your patience. And another one, thanking you for your recovery and Big Book Wisdom being such a great inspiration and resource. Thank you all for your participation in this meeting. It's been a very good RICO 12-weeker weekly speaker meeting for all addicts and those wanting to learn more about addiction and the recovery therefrom. If you have additional questions or weren't able to ask that, please go to RICO12.com/forum and join in our community and ask those questions and answer others' questions that will come up there. I invite the audience to come back next week. If you have not yet gone to RICO12.com, that's RECO12.com, and submitted your email address so that you can get on the weekly list for the invitations to come out, please go do so so you can join us live each Friday at noon Central Time. Now, to close us out, Yitzi has asked that we close out the meeting and launch into our day with the seventh step prayer, and he's happy to say that himself. So I'm going to turn the floor back to you, Yitzi, to close this out with that seventh step prayer.
Thank you. The seventh step prayer, if anyone wants to follow along, is in the AA Big Book on page 76 in the second paragraph. Prayer for those sick and suffering inside the rooms, outside the rooms, those who don't know they have a problem, those who are in denial about their problems. Let's close with that prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Yitzi. Everybody, keep coming back. It works if I work it, so work it. You are worth it.
Survive the storms and walk through searching.